The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm alongside Kaylee Stasiak, filling in for the big guy. Have a lot to get to. We have Brian Lewerke, the Michigan State quarterback. Brad will be joined by him later in the show. Michigan State taking on ASU, and Lewerke is an Arizona product, a former Pinnacle High School quarterback. He was the quarterback right before Spencer Rattler, so they've had a pretty good run of QBs there. But he sits down with the big guy to go over the game on Saturday, ASU and Michigan State. Michael Fabiano, the fantasy expert from the NFL Network, he will also be taking your questions. I know it's been a big week for drafts as we approach week one of the NFL season, so he has all of your fantasy questions answered, and that's coming up with Brad as well. And then talk to the Lopes, so a lot to get to. But Haley, let's start things off with our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And Haley, you were at the Diamondbacks game last night.
I was.
They were able to end the skid against the Padres, winning 6-0. And Robbie Ray looking really impressive.
Looked really good. It was that fastball. He said the command he had there was mechanically the best he's felt all year. And just he said it felt effortless the entire outing, which is something that definitely didn't happen early in the season. He obviously was down, came back and struggled a little bit. These last two starts have been pretty impressive from here. It's good to see that he's kind of getting back in the groove here as we head into these last like 3.5 weeks of the season. Mm-hmm. So
he's really strung together quite a few really good starts, but he hasn't been able really to go deep in ball games. Before this start, 5 innings, 5 1/3 in games where he only gave up one run in each of them, but the walks got to him, the pitch count got to him. In this game, able to go deep, 6 1/3 innings, just 2 hits, 2 walks, 10 strikeouts. Also forced 6 ground balls, so they're keeping it out of the air as well. And this is against a San Diego team that kind of beat him up on August 17th. He only went 4 1/3. 3 earned runs given up, 5 walks. So that was a nice little bounce back for him. And you're starting to see, I think, just it come a little more naturally to him.
And when you come off of an injury or you're out for a little while, it's not going to come back and be as easy as it was. You have to ease back into it. And, I mean, that easing back into it didn't come at their best time. Obviously, since the All-Star break, or since the Diamondbacks have come back from the All-Star break, things haven't been clicking as well as they were in the first half, and part of that has been Robbie Ray's starts. But to be clicking now, yeah, it's coming into the home stretch, but it's good for the Diamondbacks, I believe.
And in the second half, Diamondbacks playing a touch over 500 baseball right now. So the Braves are coming into town, a first-place Braves team with a lot of young talent. Ronald Acuna just hit another leadoff home run right before we went to air. I believe that's 8 for the year for him.
It's 8th leadoff home run for the year. It set a Braves franchise record. It's his 24th of the season. He's only hit leadoff 44 times this season. So when you look at that, those numbers, yeah, impressive there for Acuna.
Yeah, so 20% of
the time. And he's only 20 years old,
yeah.
Too.
And it's a young talent. It's not just Acuna. It's Ozzie Albies at second base. They really kind of have a youth movement going. So similarly to what we've seen out of the Diamondbacks this year, the Braves are able to jump on pitchers early as well. But the skid has happened, a tough four-game set against the Dodgers, especially kind of the way it went down with Matt Kemp with the late-inning home run off of Archie Bradley to give them the win. On Saturday, and then the walk-off double. Very similar situation on Sunday. A base was open, but they opted to have Bradley throw to Kemp, and Kemp was able to walk it off. So that felt like a real gut punch, I feel like, to Diamondback fans, because it was kind of it seemed like Archie Bradley was always the counter last year. It was, you have your biggest hitter coming up. Okay, Archie Bradley, he's probably going to get him out. He's probably going to take care of business. Seeing it go back-to-back, almost deja vu, like that felt like there was something, you know, happening. And the Dodgers continue to surge. The Rockies are continuing to surge. The Diamondbacks are definitely still in the mix, but they have a tough four-game set against Atlanta. I think the encouraging news, if you're a Diamondbacks fan, is you have the guys who are really clicking as starters going against the Braves that start on Thursday.
Well, and something to note too from last night, they will be switching back Ray and Godley start. Mm-hmm. So Ray will be starting on Sunday to close out this four game set with the Braves. Godley will be on Monday against the Rockies.
Yeah, and so, Godley went on paternity leave.
But that, I don't think that factored in so much. Lovello said that was something they were always intending to do. So it's happening at a good time, though. Like we said, Ray's clicking.
Yeah, so you'll have Greinke, Corbin, Buchholz, and Ray going against the Braves in this four-game set. So that'll be definitely interesting as they sit a game and a half behind the Rockies, a game behind the Dodgers, and two games behind in the wild card. So
I do want to point out, it's been one player that has kind of spoiled things for the Diamondbacks in this last week even. Mm-hmm. It was Matt Kemp against the Dodgers, and it was Framil Reyes for the Padres, who hit the 3-run home run off of Godley and the solo shot that were the only two hits that Godley gave up in that start on Monday night. The score obviously didn't reflect Godley's outing. He said he made those two mistake pitches and regretted it. They made him pay for it. But then on Tuesday night, it was also Framil Reyes that spoiled the no-no bid for Ray. So Kemp and Reyes.
A thorn in their side.
Just single players, and it just goes to show how it takes one at-bat to just kind of change a game.
And when the bats are struggling, everything's magnified.
Right.
Every pitch is magnified. So four straight games, the Diamondbacks put up two runs. Before that, they put up one run against the Dodgers. The bats have been quiet. They came out last night, six runs, especially towards the end of the game.
Right, it was that seventh inning that sparked. Yeah.
They were able to pile it on. Daniel Descalzo continues to be really clutch in late game situations. So again, a really big Atlanta series, a four game. They then go on the road to Colorado, on the road to Houston. They play Chicago, and then they host Colorado and the Dodgers.
It's not going to be an easy last month.
It's a gauntlet in September for the Diamondbacks. And if they do position themselves and make the postseason, they certainly earned it in September. Phoenix Mercury, this game five against the Seattle Storm. The Storm took it 94-84. It does not indicate how close this game was. The entire time, the Mercury, even though they were leading, they were up by seven at half, it felt like it was a 2-point game the entire time. And it really came down to Sue Bird. She had 14 points in the fourth quarter in a 5-minute span.
Wow.
Where she just completely took over the game. You know, Diana Taurasi did what she does, 17 points. Brittany Griner, 21 points. Dawana Bonner, who I feel like gets kind of left out. There's a three-headed monster with the Mercury, and Dawana Bonner is definitely a part of that. 14 and 8 rebounds. She had some really key shots down the stretch in that one. But, it was essentially just Sue Bird going unconscious and putting up those 14 points. Entering that game, the Mercury had outscored the Storm by 58 in the fourth quarter. And so the Storm, the number one seed, definitely deserving, able to shut the door in the fourth quarter.
Well, and I was looking at some stuff with WNBA earlier in this season, and it definitely was consistently the Storm were the biggest challenge and the thorn in the side for the Mercury all season long. They did that and got the win. They were pretty savage on Twitter, though, post-game. They tweeted just nothing but 13-1, which is now Diana Rossi's record that she's got going. So
yeah, her record in winner take all games in the WNBA. They are certainly able to do that because they're the top seed.
It was a good
they won
looking
that
at
game.
Those highlights, yep,
go for it, but you don't want to piss off Diana Taurasi. So and that's what sparked Sue Bird. Also, she had a broken nose, was wearing a mask. She felt like she got popped in the face on a kind of a loose ball type rebound deal, and she felt like someone was trying to rip her mask off. That kind of ticked her off a little bit, and that's when she went off. So
don't mess
with girls. I just love you know, with the NBA, everybody knew the Warriors were going to win the NBA title. It was, you know, clear as day. There were a couple contenders in there, but it was still really interesting TV watching these games and watching those type of interactions off the court. So I love that, you know, they're I think that Phoenix and Seattle, there is a bit of a rivalry because they're naturally two of the better teams in the mm-hmm. league, and geographically as well, they're, you know, close-ish to each other. But just adding those little jabs and prods, like, I'm just excited for next year to see what. And it's really been the entire WNBA season, you know. And I know there are going to be some people that are going to go, oh, fundamentals and the girls. Like, okay, quit being a jackass. Drop the caveman club, like, and watch these games, because these are some incredible basketball games. And the finals between the Mystics and the Storm, that's going to be a really good one. I obviously kept track of the Mercury pretty closely, but this finals will be really good as well. Let's talk about U of A football. You were at the Diamondbacks last night. You were at U of A covering the game
on Saturday.
Tough loss against BYU. What were your takeaways? What are you looking for moving forward as they go to Houston?
I know Brad talked about it, and we, on our car ride down there, our car ride back to Phoenix, we're discussing Khalil Tate didn't run at all. They didn't utilize his run game. Lots of incomplete passes. I honestly was going into this game like, wow, going to get to see Khalil Tate in person. It's going to be a good game. BYU has a pretty good defense, but this Arizona offense, and I was not impressed at all. So, Houston this week, they've got to turn it around. If not, then Kevin Sumlinera is not off to a good start.
Yeah, this Houston team beat U of A last year. Ed Oliver, who is going to be a top five NFL draft prospect as a defensive lineman, he can really wreak some havoc. I was there in the stands, and the one thing I noticed, it's so just interesting when you get a slightly different perspective of, you know, usually I'm on the field, so it's kind of harder to see when guys are open, when they're not, that sort of stuff. Sitting in the stands, there were quite a few times that quite a few U of A fans were upset because it was pretty clear as day. There were, you know, receivers streaking down the field one way and Khalil was looking the other way. So I'm sure that'll get addressed
this week
in film. And obviously, like, Khalil Tate is an incredible talent. Kevin Sumlin is an offensive coach. Week one, weird stuff happens. But that being said, there was a lot of buzz around this
and
team.
And it did not live up to that buzz at all.
Especially once you get to the Pac-12, you're going to want to get that figured out, because it's a wide-open Pac-12 South this year. You know, it looks like USC, I would say, is the favorite right now in the South, based on the way JT Daniels played. I think if you get whoever is the quarterback, and right now for USC, that quarterback is JT Daniels, you get him to play good. He doesn't even have to play great.
Right.
He has the athletes around him that they, and the defense on the other side, and they can certainly make some noise. But I feel like it's really wide open. I think ASU made a nice little statement in week one. Yes, it was UTSA. They have a big prove-it game against Michigan State. Probably a pissed-off Michigan State team because they got upset against Utah State. But they're a nationally ranked team. Like we said, Brian Lewerke's coming in. One of the more efficient quarterbacks in the entire nation. And a Big Ten power. You know, Mike D'Antonio doesn't lose often. And if he does, it is a kind of an early game, and then he's able to rattle off someone. So should be a lot of interesting stuff with that. In terms of the Cardinals, they're kicking off their season against the Redskins. Haley, any storylines jumping out to you with this team, with this game?
I said prior to the college football season, I'm going to say it again here at the start of the NFL season, I'm just looking forward to real games being played. I think there's been a lot of talk. Obviously, Steve Wilks coming in as head coach, Sam Bradford here at quarterback, David Johnson returning, Larry Fitzgerald his 15th season. There's plenty. Christian Kirk. There's plenty of storylines to follow here. I'm just ready to see it when it matters.
I'm intrigued to see this receiving core because some of the final cuts that they made, that the Cardinals made, some veteran wide receivers that have NFL experience. Greg Little, Bryce Butler, both of those guys got cut. In some cases, undrafted free agents were kept over them. And a couple at the wide receiver position, but it's pretty wide open after Larry Fitzgerald. You have, the Christian Kirks, the Chad Williams, Ricky Seals-Jones is a tight end, but I feel like he's going to get put out in some wide receiver positions as well. I think what they have going for them is a healthy Sam Bradford can spread the ball around and spread it really accurately.
Right.
So that's going to, I think, kind of potentially dummy-proof some stuff for some of the younger receivers as they get their feet under them in the NFL. But that's kind of the one thing I'm going to be looking for, as well as how's David Johnson going to be able to bounce back? You know, the broken wrist, he said most of the offseason he was just able to strictly condition. You know, the past couple of off seasons where he's gone down early, it's been because, or during that offseason, he's been able to utilize that conditioning. So we could see a potentially different David Johnson. They've made, you know, no secrets about it that they want David Johnson to be that workhorse.
Mm-hmm.
Can he handle a full workload? And how are they going to incorporate Chase Edmonds and TJ Logan? So a lot of interesting things on the offense, definitely. I think the defense is a little bit more set, but still going to be plenty of questions and plenty of really good stuff there. Coming up on the Brad Sesmat Show, Brad is going to sit down with Michigan State quarterback and former Pinnacle QB Brian Lewerke. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show.
Let's turn our attention now closer to Saturday night showdown at Sun Devil Stadium. Michigan State rolls in. Brian Lewerke, former Pinnacle High quarterback, comes home leading Sparty against Herm Edwards and Arizona State. It'll be a nationally televised broadcast. A lot of intrigue, and we wanted to have Brian Lewerke on with us via Skype. He joins us now. As we look ahead to this game where you're coming home, just your general feelings, emotions about coming back to Arizona this week.
It's pretty exciting. It'll be the first time playing a college game in the state of Arizona in front of all my family and all my friends. A lot of people that live in Arizona that don't have the opportunity to fly all the way out to Michigan to see a game, they'll all be able to be there, and it's going to be really fun.
The amount of ticket requests and all the stuff off the field that you've had to put up with, or have people generally kept that away from you?
No, I mean, I've had a couple. I've kind of let my dad deal with all that because he's trying to coordinate everyone. So I'm trying to get as many tickets as I can for my teammates. Obviously there's not a lot of people from the West Coast, so not a ton of my teammates need them. Mm-hmm. But my dad probably has the exact number with all that stuff.
Is there extra emotion for you this week because of this game? I mean, every week's a big game at Michigan State. You're in a big conference. You're coming off a very close game the other night, but I would have to think, Brian, that coming into this game, there might be a little bit of extra for you for Saturday night.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. We'll find out, I guess, once game time rolls around. But I'm trying to keep all my stuff in check, trying not to get too excited or too emotional or anything like that, and just play the game.
When was the last time you were in Sun Devil Stadium?
Last time? I think I was on a visit maybe for a game my junior year of high school. Mm-hmm. So it's been a while.
Take us back to that. There's fans out here that have said, why is it he got out of Arizona and went to Michigan State? Take us through that.
You know, it was coming down to my top two schools were ASU and Michigan State. You know, I felt like both of them were great programs. One day I got a call from Michigan State. I decided to take a visit here. And I'm not sure really what it was. I just kind of felt like Michigan State was the right place for me. Obviously, I would have liked to stay home maybe and been close to family and friends. But ultimately, I love the decision I made to come to Michigan State and kind of get away a little bit. Took a little bit to get used to that, just being away from family and first time being away from home, really. But after a little bit, I got a lot more used to it, and I'm pretty comfortable where I am right now.
Did you have some moments where you were thinking, I just want to go home, which is normal, I think. Did you have
some
of those?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, just being away from family. My first couple weeks up here were a little rough, just, you know, being so far from home. But once I started making friends and establishing, like, relationships with all the people here, it really felt a lot better.
Okay, on the field, let's just talk about your development from when you left Pinnacle to where you are now as a quarterback. Physically, you're much bigger. The game, I'm sure, has slowed down. Just take me through that process.
Yeah, I mean, I've put on somewhere around 20 to 30 pounds since I got here. So just physically, I've gotten a lot bigger. I think I've just been completely different quarterback in terms of my knowledge of football from my high school to college. I've learned so much here. Mm-hmm. My quarterback coach has done a great job of teaching me stuff. And I've learned from past quarterbacks like Connor Cook and just guys that have, you know, are in the NFL now. I've talked with Kirk Cousins and Drew Stanton a good amount. So just, you know, that relationship that Michigan State has with NFL quarterbacks, I think, is big.
Look at Arizona State. What do you see across from you?
You know, they're a fast team. They play nickel package, so they have most of the time 5 DBs on the field almost at all times. So they're designed, I feel like, for speed and to try and take away the deep shots and take away the deep balls. And but you know, I think they're a good team, and it'll be a fun test for us on Saturday.
Before you get out of here, Pinnacle, have you been paying attention to what's been going on at your high school, or are you just laser focused on college?
No, I mean, I obviously pay attention to Pinnacle a ton. I saw they beat Horizon last week. Still haven't lost to them yet, which is awesome.
to get that little dig in there.
Get a little bit in there. J.D. Johnson has done a great job filling in for Spencer. Mm-hmm. I think Spencer's coming back this week, if I'm not mistaken. Just a small injury for him, but I've been keeping track of everything that they're doing.
Will you be on the sideline for their game Friday night? You have time?
I think their game on Friday is in.
Oh, they're in Vegas. You're right.
California. Yeah.
No. You're right. So no. Heck yeah. No. Come on, which, Brad.
I know it sucks for me because I can't go to their game and they can't even come to mine on Saturday. But you know, I wish them all the luck down in California.
Okay, Spencer, what can you do that he can't?
Not a lot. I feel like he can do almost everything. You know, he's an athletic guy. He's probably gonna break all my records if he hasn't already. And I can't wait to see what he does in college too.
You mentioned J.D. Johnson. So far, 2 games, he's already been offered. It's never took a snap till Spencer was injured. What are your impressions?
I think he's done a great job. You know, being behind a guy like Spencer isn't easy. Just seeing all the attention and all the success that he's had. But I think J.D. is, you know, a Division I quarterback as well. Obviously, he's gotten offers. So I think he's done a great job of filling in and being that guy for Spencer.
Have you worked with both of them?
J.D. was on my brother's youth team, I think. So I haven't worked with him. But that was back when 4 or 5 years ago. But I've thrown with Spencer and done all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. You're mentoring. That's great. Tell me about academics before you get out of here. How is it going in the classroom for you at Michigan State?
It's good. I graduate this December in 3.5 years, which is awesome. I'm going to try and get my master's in kinesiology come January. And that's, I think, a 1-year program, so I can get that done while I'm still in school. And, you know, my major right now is economics. And like I said, I'll be graduating in December, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Wow. Just killing it in the classroom, too. That's great stuff. Look, it's a great story of you coming back to Phoenix, to Tempe, this Saturday night. Best of luck against Arizona State, and appreciate the time.
No problem, guys. Thank you very much.
Brian Lewerke there with us via Skype from Michigan State, the starting quarterback for the Spartans this Saturday night. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Susmat. Here now is Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network and NFL.com, the Hall of Famer. And man, the mailbag is filled with Le'Veon Bell, but I'm going to go a different direction to start this out with because I want fearless predictions from Michael Fabiano. Fearless. Just this is going to happen in 2018 without a question. This player is going to kill it. And
well, I'm always fearful, you know that, because it's very difficult to predict this stuff. But I will say with confidence that I believe Royce Freeman will be this year's Kareem Hunt. I've been talking about it for a while now. We've already seen the Broncos have projected him to be their starting running back in Week 1 against Seattle. And even just based on volume, he's the guy that I'm starting. You're starting to see people draft him even higher. In fact, I was in a draft last night with Ian Rappaport, who took him in the 2nd round earlier in the day. I had 3 drafts, by the way, yesterday. I took Royce Freeman in the 4th round, but once that news broke that he was going to start, all of a sudden his ADP started to rise. So you're really starting to see people jump on that Royce Freeman bandwagon. So that's one prediction that I feel pretty confident. I also really like Joe Mixon this season. Whether he's a 2nd or a 3rd or round pick, he's someone who I believe will take that next step. Maybe not become an elite fantasy running back, but a pretty darn good one and a better one than he was last season in his rookie campaign.
You stole my thunder, man. Those are my two.
I'm sorry.
That's fine. Sorry. No, it's fine. It's.
See, we've been working together so long, it's like we're in simpatico.
Yes, because look, Le'Veon Bell, we talked about James Conover last month. Like,
I know.
And what's going on now in Pittsburgh? Like, what's going on as we sit here today in your view of how you play Le'Veon Bell? I'm in a draft tonight, and I'm sure there's going to be somebody taking him early, and I'm sitting there at 12, mm-hmm. which I love being 12. I love having back-to-backs in a 12-team mm-hmm. league. Le'Veon Bell, what is the strategy with him? What do you do?
So in one of my three drafts yesterday, he fell to me at 4, and I took him. And at some point, it becomes hard to pass on him. So if you're in the top 5, I still think he's a top 5 pick. Maybe it goes in some order, Gurley, Zeke, David Johnson, Antonio Brown, and then maybe Bell falls to 5. Maybe someone takes Alvin Kamara over Bell and he falls to 6. I can't see him falling past 6, though. Mm-hmm. Now, we still don't know what the issue is with his not reporting. I don't know. Maybe he has seen that all of these defensive players are getting his contracts and he's upset about it. But ultimately, it would really be smart for Bell to get in there and report, because ultimately he is in a contract year. And if he wants to get a big deal in 2019, he needs to produce in 2018. So I would expect to see him sooner rather than later. With that being said, we also saw this same situation last year. And what happened? He went into Cleveland and he struggled. He's playing Cleveland this week,
yep.
assuming he's back.
Yep.
I'd still play him unless I'm really deep at running back, but I would expect a slow start from Le'Veon Bell. That's sort of typically been what's happened to players who have missed time and missed the preseason and missed camp. So we'll see, but it's a scary situation. And the James Conner mention, the last time we talked, he was more of a late-round flyer. Now, especially in these big-boy leagues, you're starting to see him move up, because people remember what D'Angelo Williams did when Le'Veon Bell was suspended and went down a couple of seasons ago. He was good. He was really good. Mm-hmm. And the Steelers like Connor. So if you draft Le'Veon Bell in the first round, it would be a very smart move to try and get James Connor, even if you have to reach for him maybe a round or two earlier than you otherwise would. And if Connor is out there in the 10th, 11th, 12th round and you don't have Le'Veon Bell, take him, snake him, see what happens.
Well, and also waiver wire this week. If you did your draft 3-4 weeks ago, you've got to go on him, right? I mean, don't you do that this week?
He would probably not be available in most of the leagues that I'm playing in, but if he is available in your league, you absolutely need to go out and grab him. Same kind of thing with like an Alfred Morris. You know, 3 weeks ago, Alfred Morris wasn't even on the radar. Now suddenly he's going to be the starting running back for the 49ers with Jerick McKinnon out for the season. And because he knows the offense of Kyle Shanahan, he's got value. Matt Breida, same kind of thing. He was more of a draftable asset even though he's banged up. But there's going to be a committee situation in San Francisco, probably led by Morris, at least from what I'm hearing. And he's someone who needs to be picked up across the board. Should be owned in 100% of leagues right now. That's Alfred Morris.
Okay, so I'm getting a bunch of questions. We're talking about the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, NFL.com. Rather than just go one by one here, let's just go through your view on Michael Gallup, because everybody's looking at Dallas. And I'm getting a lot of questions about him and strategy, and where do you see him going?
I've seen him go as high as the 9th or 10th round, and to me that's just too rich for my blood. I would rather take a chance on him somewhere in the 12-13 range. Alan Hurns is also there, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was Hurns who led that team in targets at the wide receiver position. And it's a situation where we're throwing darts. We're not really sure who the number one wide receiver in Dallas is going to be. The most upside play is Michael Gallup, which is why he's going higher. Maybe the safer play is Alan Hurns. With that being said, I don't expect any of the Cowboys receivers to put up huge numbers this year, because that offense is going to run through Ezekiel Elliott. And based on what they did with their cuts, it is very likely he is going to see 25 touches a game.
Okay, Keelan Cole getting a lot of the same sort of questions. Jacksonville.
Yeah, I love him. And actually, I liked him before Marquise Lee went down. People forget that he actually led the Jags in receiving yards last year. Really talented player. Started to come on in the second half of the season. Now projects to potentially be their number one. They also have D.D. Westbrook and Dante Moncrief, of course, and the rookie D.J. Chark. But if I had to pick one of those Jaguars wide receivers, it would be Keelan Cole. And you could probably get him in a 10th, 11th, or 12th round, depending on the size of your league.
Before I get you out of here, quarterbacks with the Jets and Sam Darnold, and Nick Foles with the Eagles, takes on both.
Darnold, not rosterable at this point in typical redrafts. I'd keep my eye on him, but the quarterback position is really deep. And the matchup isn't even a bad one against the Lions in week one, but I'm not going to start him unless I'm in a super flex league or a 2QB league, and typically he's not rostered at this point. Nick Foles, I mean, he didn't look all that good in the preseason. I'm not going to rest my hopes of winning in week one on a backup quarterback, although he is a Super Bowl MVP, on a Thursday night. There's far better options out there on the waiver wire, and typically at this point, people have the quarterback on their roster who they're going to start in week one. So that Eagles offense could start off slowly because, remember, Alshon Jeffrey is also going to be out. So we could see a lot of Jay Ajayi in that contest.
Okay, before you go, Andy Dalton or Jimmy Garoppolo? One question sent in. Dalton's got Buffalo. Garoppolo's got Minnesota. Where do you go?
Dalton actually has Indianapolis, and that's the play.
My bad.
Andy Dalton is the play because Garoppolo's playing the Vikings, and that game is in Minnesota, where they allowed an average of fewer than 10 points per game to quarterbacks last year, and their defense got better in the offseason. So as crazy as it sounds, and it's already starting in week one, Andy Dalton is a sleeper this week, and he's a better play than Jimmy G, believe it or not.
Yeah, interesting there. Thanks for the time, as always.
All right, my friend, take care.
It's Michael Fabiano right there at the NFL Network, NFL.com, the Hall of Famer. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University Athletics year-round. Appreciate the partnership with GCU. With the U.S. Open in full force, we figured it'd be a good time to have Greg Prudhomme on. Greg is the women's tennis coach, men's tennis coach, women's side coming into his 12th season. He was recently given the Steve Wilkinson USTPA National College Coach of the Year Award. He's been at the U.S. Open here in the last couple of weeks. And it's a good time to have him on to talk about the sport, his honor, and much more. How are you, Coach?
I'm great. I appreciate that. How are you doing?
Greg, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. Curious on the U.S. Open before we deep dive into everything. So
yeah.
You have Serena and what she's wearing. You have a player changing on the court. You've got Serena against Venus. You have coaches meeting with players when they're not supposed to during rain delays. The controversy of controversies going on in tennis, first and foremost.
Yeah.
You didn't see any of this stuff, did you, when you were at the Open?
Monday was a little uneventful. We were there for the first day. We did see the number one seed, Halep, go down first match in the new stadium. So did see a little bit of that controversy, but all of those things I've been following on social media and online and yeah, no shortage of things to talk about there.
No question about it. It's crazy. When you walk into the U.S. Open as a tennis coach, as a lover of the game, what was it like to walk in there for you? Was it your first time? And what's it do for a coach?
That's a great question. It was my third time, fortunate enough, and I have been to two other Grand Slams. I've been to the French Open. I was able to work tennis into my honeymoon by asking my wife if she wanted to go to Paris for our honeymoon. And when she said yes, she didn't know it was to go to the French Open, but I got away with that one. And then, so that was on. And then Wimbledon a couple of times, and then the U.S. Open was the third one that I went to. And, yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, being a lifelong tennis coach, an enthusiast, like you said, and a lover of the game, you have to go to our marquee event. So it doesn't matter how many times you've been there. When you show up, it's just a great feeling.
Hey, honey, we're going to Paris.
Great energy.
Hey, honey, we're going to Paris. Yeah. And, oh, by the way, we have to make a stop just for a little bit. So
exactly.
You've not done the Australian Open?
I haven't done that. That's the last one on the list, so I'd definitely like to give that a go.
Yeah, that sounds good. The honor that I talked about off the top, what did it mean for you?
It's a great honor. It's certainly humbling, and it's a collaborative award by far. To the opportunity that I get here at Grand Canyon University with Brian Mueller and his executive team, with Mike Vaught and his administrative team in athletics, they provide us, you know, the facilities and the resources that us coaches need to provide for our athletes. So, you know, it couldn't be done without them. It couldn't be done without my student athletes who, you know, give so much of them while they're here, balancing their time with their studies, their social life, and their sports. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, all of my my mentors growing up, my family, my immediate family, my folks. It's a collaborative award, so at the same time, it's a great honor. I don't take myself too serious because I know I had a lot of help. And I also feel like I'm just trying to do what a coach is supposed to do. It's a service industry, being a coach, so I feel like it's more about the people and the service than it actually is about the sport. So one side of the coin, I don't feel like I should be singled out more than anybody else, but at the same time, I respect the USPTA organization so much, and to be sharing that award with the ones that have won it previously, it's a great honor.
Talk to the Lopes with Greg Prudhomme this week. We talk women's and men's tennis at Grand Canyon University every week. Talk to the Lopes. Your sport, how much of your coaching, teaching, mentoring is mental versus the physical side with kids?
That's a great question. I am minutes from walking into our first countable athletic-related hours with my tennis teams for this new season. Last week was all administrative. This week we take the courts tomorrow, but before we take the courts, no one's listening to this, right? Don't give away my secrets, but we're getting ready to go into a two-hour mental toughness training session. So I feel like at this level, once you get to Division I college and above, it's more mental than physical because everybody can hit a ball hard. Everybody can move and they're athletic. Everybody's training. They're fit. They're hitting tennis balls. They have experience. So what makes the difference at this level and above, including some of the things you were talking about that's going on at the U.S. Open, it's definitely going to be the psychological part of the game.
Because when you sit with a player, Greg, do you have to look at them squarely in the eyes and say, you've got to get tougher mentally. Everything else is great. You're just not there yet. Or, man, you got to just dial it back a couple notches because you're killing yourself needlessly. There's a balance there, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, that's the fun of it. That's the art of it. That's the thing that makes coaching never get old. If it were only about the X's and O's, if it were only about the sport science behind it and you're teaching the same grip and the forehand and technique and follow through forever, maybe it could get a little bit monotonous and old, but the mental side of the sport, just when you think you've seen it all, you haven't. And so, yeah, there's a lot of that. Most of the work done during the matches, on the courts, on the changeovers, is working on what's between the ears. Most of the pre-match preparations the night before when we're traveling on the road, it's a lot less about the X's and O's and much more about making sure they're mentally prepared and emotionally prepared, and then following the matches. We'll get much more out of the matches. We'll learn more if we address those things as well when matches are finished. So there's a lot of that going on in this sport.
Do you ever have a mental breakdown of a player?
Yes. The good news is less and less. I'm proud that our team here at Grand Canyon University, we get comments all the time from officials that officiate our matches, not only home, but we've been mostly on the road since we went Division I. So I get comments all the time from officials after matches or even during matches. Oh, wow, you guys are you're a religiously affiliated school, right? Because you guys are so calm under pressure and behave so well. Or I get, do your athletes get good grades, because which they do, and then they say, oh, they must because they behave better than most of the teams that we officiate. And although, yes, we get good grades, and yes, we're a religiously based school, Christian affiliation, it's because we train in the mental game, and we address and we work on it. So I'm real proud to say that, sure, we're never immune to the next mental breakdown. It can happen at any time, but at the same time, they're less and less, or they're shorter lived. You don't see major slumps when you address the mental game like you would if somebody doesn't get any mental coaching. So, yeah.
It's the mind gym, I like to say, of sports. You know, the you're in the gym and your mind is getting worked on. Before I get you out of here, the season ahead on the ladies' side, just walk me through what you're excited about with this team.
I'm excited about the fact that we're returning a lot of girls that were young last year that were on the brink of having great breakthroughs. Some of them did. Others were right on the verge. So we just love to see our sophomores. And what did we have? We had four freshmen seeing starting action last year. So we're super excited about those four coming back and seeing how they look with a year under their belt. We're excited about the juniors that are going to be seniors in Selena Boer and Amelia Ochipinti. We won't graduate any players after this season.
Wow.
So, yeah, I said juniors to seniors. No, they're going from their sophomore year to junior year. We won't have any seniors. So what's exciting about this women's team is that we're going to have this exact same team for the next 2 years. So a lot can be done when that chemistry in that core gets to stay the same.
Appreciate the time. It was fun and good visiting with you, Greg. Thanks.
No problem. My pleasure. Thanks for having us on.
It's Greg Prudhomme there at GCU, the women's and men's tennis coach. And that is Talk to the Lopes for this week.